Welcome, Wanderers, to D&D and Big D, where we put the D in D&D. We're a group of friends who play through published adventures and review them in post-mortem. We also invite other podcasts, content creators, streamers, and nerd celebrities as special guest PCs. Howdy, everyone. This is Dungeon Meister Paul, also known as Stunt Monkey Z on Twitter. For this one-shot, we're playing through The Wendigo Horror, written by Lucas Meneses, a Dungeoneering adventure that is already available on DM's Guild. Our special guest PC is Marissa. This is her first session on our podcast and is an incredible adventurer. We were so glad to invite her back after this. Now, before we get started, don't forget to click on the subscribe button wherever you get your podcast ear candy, follow us on Twitter, leave us a review, and tell your friends about us. And now, be sure to get your stealth checks ready and pack your Dungeoneering gear as we listen to The Wendigo Horror by Lucas Meneses.
Hello, Paul.
Oh, hello, Marissa. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Surviving.
I know that feeling well.
Lenny, you on yet?
Yeah, just got here.
Cool. So, Marissa, tell us about your D&D background. People really want to know.
Well, let's see. What have I done? Basically, in the midst of moving a year and a half ago, my husband got hooked on Critical Role and ultimately got me hooked. And
Okay. I'm sorry. Your internet cut out a little bit. It sounded like you said coked out on...
Critical Role.
Okay.
Yeah, Critical Role. And that got me hooked on it. And he found a group online that he was playing with, and they asked me to join. And we've now been playing with them for over a year. I think we're, based on the amount of DMs, I think we've been in 5 or 6 different campaigns, including my own.
Wow.
Because I've DM'd for them. My husband has DM'd. But actually, all of it has been online, especially, obviously, for the past few months. But yeah, like, I've DM'd about... half a dozen or so times, but mostly I'm just playing, so it's fun.
Very cool. And so y'all have a Twitch channel, right?
We just kind of jump around on our own Twitch channels.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
that's really cool. Okay, so I was reviewing the game we were going to be playing tonight, just real quick. It's called The Wendigo Horror.
Ooh.
And so this adventure is a level 5 adventure written by Lucas Meneses, and it looks like it's readily available at DM's Guild. So everybody ready?
Yep.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Well, I need about a half an hour. Hold on, keep talking.
Typical.
Well, yeah. Well, bad audio again.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess since Marissa's the guest, she gets to go first. Introduce your character, please.
Oh, okay. So my character is Bea. She is very young. She's about 5 feet tall. And she is actually a satyr, but she pretends that she's a human. She stole a helm, and it is the rare item that I got, the rare magic item, and it is called Helm of the Gods. And she stole it from a temple, and she jammed her horns through it because it already had horns, so it just makes it look like her horns are part of the actual helm. And she pretends that she's human instead of a satyr. So, but yeah. And she is a monk, and she is of the drunken master technique. Monk.
Nice.
We have an affinity for drunken masters.
She loves to party.
We do.
Yeah. Very cool.
Could I just ask you again, what was the name? Because it didn't quite come.
It's D. D-H-I. D.
Okay. Thank you very much.
No problem.
I guess I should write that down too. Crap. Okay. Next up is Lenny.
Oh, they call me Cluck. I'm really not sure why, but so as you're looking at him, he's again also about 5 feet tall, maybe a little under 5. He kind of stretches his neck up a little bit. He is appears to be of an Aarakocra kind of lineage, but he looks more like a very scrawny Foghorn Leghorn. He's all white. There's no other coloration except for his beak and his eyes, but the rest of all of his plumage is powder white with his bright kind of orangish legs and beak. And I got the inspiration from one of the new chicks that we have that was kind of extra rambunctious trying to jump out of the crate we have them in. So, but yes, he is a ranger. I do like to spend my time in the woods and forest regions. I don't like goblets or dolls, especially dolls. Those goblets and dolls are my favorite enemies. And very handy with a bow. I don't like to get that close to things. I prefer range, and I try to stay out of the way as best I can and just pick them off at a distance.
Sorry. This has got to be like your Rembrandt moment right now. Damn. All right. Sean, you're up.
All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Gareth Amistad. I'm a half-orc warlock. I'm basically kind of like that kid who tries really hard in school, but he just can't do well at maths, even though both of his parents are like math teachers. So he just kind of like hires someone to like give him the answers, and he can just cheat his way to success. So what I mean by that is actually both my parents are spellcasters who are naturally gifted at it, and I could never compete with them or learn properly, so I just kind of made a deal with Asmodeus to, be really good at spells.
Oh, damn. All right, Jake?
So you see this dark elf, and he's wearing a, traditional bone mold, and he's got his nice white linen kilt, and he just looks at all of you with just that look.
What
and he
look?
Introduces it.
This is Jake. We know that look.
No, but not everybody knows Jake.
Ah, very good. Sorry.
Very, like you're all children.
Oh, Jake-ish. Got it.
And so then he introduces himself. Hello, all of you, companions before me. You may call me Jakar of Spite. I am the mind behind cruelty, and I am the shadow of rumor. I am a warlock and a rogue.
Okay. All right. So here's the setup. It is the strongest winter in recent memory. There are constant snowstorms, and it covers most of the continent. The cold makes it impossible to sleep in the outside. Or should that be, cold makes it impossible to sleep outside. There are almost no foliage in the trees, and only the bravest or stupidest of beasts wander in the wild. All of you arrive at Relicta, a medium-sized medieval town at twilight. The city is known for being the headquarters of the Blue Lotus, a guild of soldiers. That's the only description. As you walk around the city, almost every house is closed as the snow starts to fall harder. The only place opened is the tavern, named Cold Deer. And as you approach, you can hear some loud argument inside. The snow makes it hard to listen to the subject of the argument. And Marissa, can you please do a perception check?
Sure. First, oh, neat. That is a nat 20.
Damn.
Ooh, nice.
So with perception, that would be a plus 2, so a total for 22.
Okay, so with a nat 20, you understand that there's a louder voice, and it's demanding his money back, since the service he paid for wasn't completed. The other voice counterpoints that the group still has 2 days to return. As all of you stand outside the tavern, the storm gets worse, and the sun disappears from the sky, leaving a cold night behind. What do y'all want to do?
Well, there's a couple of people in there arguing about money, but it's really cold out here. So maybe we should go ahead and get inside?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I'm totally down for that. Gareth is just freezing.
All right, well, then let's go.
Okay, everyone goes inside?
Yep.
Okay. Alrighty. All right, so Dee, leading this band of miscreants here, walk into the tavern. Inside the tavern, a human man is loudly arguing with a Goliath. The human is an adult with hair and beard starting to turn white and wears fancy armor, colored blue, white, and gold. Okay, here you go. Somebody want to roll a history check? Let's go with Gareth.
Okay, here we go. That's a natural one. Just going in the complete opposite direction after Dee's great start.
Okay. All right. So now, okay. So we have both extremes. And so everything else tonight we know is going to fall in the middle.
Yeah.
All right. So, oof, the natural one.
Yep. Yeah. And I don't have a history modifier. So that's just one.
He knows exactly what it is.
Without a doubt. you know, that this emblem, and here's the thing, this actually makes a whole lot of sense that Gareth, you would recognize this. Not at all. Mm-hmm. But you think you might have seen something about it somewhere in one of the tests or the exams that you had turned in that someone else filled out for you. And so based on that, you have a funny feeling that this guy is the king of the land.
Oh, wow. Look at this guy. He's like bigger than me. And I'm like over 6 feet tall, but like, and he's got, look at this emblem. He's gotta be like an emperor or something.
As soon as like y'all walk in, you see this scenario. All of a sudden, right in the middle of it, the Goliath bangs his fist on the table that where they're sitting at. Enough! And leaves the tavern, giving a quick glance to all of you and a rough nod as he's walking out.
I can't believe we just met an emperor.
I was personally hoping for a show.
And so then the emperor is still standing there. This is the man, not the Goliath. The Goliath walked out. So the man just stares at the Goliath, stares at a lot of you, and just, oh, well, this will not do. I am Frigus Amisa, strangers, member of House Santum. And listen, I hired the Blue Lotus, a squad, really, to check on an abandoned monastery located in the Expes Forest, north of town. Now, it should be a 2-day trip to go, 1 day to check, and 2 more days to return. But when I hired the group, they had left Relicta 12 days ago and hadn't returned. I will offer you 80 gold pieces each if you agree to go and find the group or check the monastery yourselves. What say you?
Well, I say nice to friggin' meet you, Frigus.
Very nice to meet you too, little boy.
Yeah, I only have 10 gold pieces to my name, so I'm up for an adventure.
Excellent. That's one person who volunteers.
Well, I mean, forests can have a lot of fun, and monasteries can have really good parties, even if they're abandoned, even better, so I'm all in.
Very well.
Flux just kind of looking around like the typical bird, kind of bouncing the head back and forth, like looking at everybody one eye at a time. Like, I'm good. I like the forest. Yeah.
And lastly, what say you?
So as tempting as your offer is, I do have to ask, what makes this particular adventure worth 80 gold? And why would that be worth my time?
Oh, as I mentioned, you know, there's a monastery that I needed checked out. And I just want to make sure that my other squad is okay and just checking on status. Or like I said, if you want to explore, by all means, you're more than welcome to. And who knows, you might find some extra items around the monastery.
Extra items is always tempting. Farewell. You've convinced me.
Excellent. Do you have any more questions for me?
You know why the monastery is abandoned?
Well, I do know that it was abandoned 170 years ago, as all the monks did claim that there had been some curse in the land that released some kind of monster who was killing them all. But I assure you that there is no such thing, and even if there were a monster, it would already be dead after all those years.
Why is it always curses?
We will start dancing because nothing beats off bad luck like a jolly dance, so she's just going to start doing a little jig.
Gareth is just kind of keeping time by clapping.
You said you had another group that went out ahead. How many were in that group?
Four of them. There were four people in that group.
Okay.
And if you didn't notice, the gentleman that left right before you, he is of the Blue Lotus. I only hired the best. So now it seems like the best doesn't want to do business with me, so I guess I got to deal with the rest. Am I right?
Well, that's not a very good way to get us to, partake in your endeavor.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of implying that we're incompetent.
Not necessarily. Perhaps there, something could be arranged as if you succeed in this. Perhaps maybe the Blue Lotus would possibly take you in as one of their own for their guild. I could put in a good word for you as well.
I chuckle in sarcasm.
Oh, I heard it, dude. We all heard it.
While that whole rebuttal from Cluck and Dee was happening, he was just kind of like elbowing Cluck in the side, just like, dude, you're embarrassing me in front of the Emperor.
Cluck doesn't even feel it. He's just kind of ruffling some of his feathers. He just looks out. Those are my feathers. Don't touch. He kind of smooths his feathers back out.
Dude, you ever seen Animaniacs?
Yeah.
It reminds me of Chicken Boot.
I miss that show.
Great show. Goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. In that case, if you have no more questions for me, I would advise to all of you to possibly get some cold weather gear in the city. I know that a set of clothes to withstand the cold is around 5 gold pieces, and much luck to you.
Do you have a place where we can spend the night? We really don't want to spend it outside if we don't have to.
You'd have to take it up with the barkeep. Uh-huh. He points right at the bar.
Thank you.
In that case, I wish you all a good night. I'm going to the second floor to my room. And he turns around and he walks away.
Be well.
Gareth, bows as he leaves.
Thank you, young one.
You're welcome, Emperor, your majesty and greatness.
All right, so over over by the bar, you see this dwarven woman just watching all of you and just cleaning up, wiping off, drying off the last few, beer glasses that she has there. She goes, let me see, if you want to eat or drink something, or if you want rooms, you're more welcome to it. We have a meal that'll cost you 5 silver, beverages are 2 silver, and the room is 5 silver pieces each.
Do you have any corn?
All we have is deer meat with beans and eggs.
Deer meat? No thanks.
Eggs.
You want eggs? How would you like them?
No, I would not. Cluck just staring at her. And just turns around. See his little tail feathers kind of puff up as he walks away.
Well, I for one would love to take you up on that meal offer.
Everyone wants to stay the night, or does everyone want to get going? What do y'all want to do?
Well, see, because it's still winter outside. I'm not sure how the rest of you would do with the cold, but I mean, it can be kind of dangerous and extra tricky at night in the snow. So I would suggest maybe at first light or just before we head out.
Sounds like a party to me.
I suppose.
So spend the night?
Yes, spend the night.
Okay, I will go back to the barkeep and be like, okay, so I'm going to need a room, and probably so will I.
Okay, that'll be 20 silver pieces.
Okay, I will hand her 20 silver pieces.
Alrighty, and you get 4 room keys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too.
Thank you, Dee. And Cluck hands her the silver for his room to repair.
Oh, no, don't worry about it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, so then we fast forward to the next morning. Nothing happens. And so y'all are heading out, or are you going to get some provisions?
We are going to need supplies.
Yeah.
Gareth would definitely like some cold weather gear.
You don't have feathers? Oh, that's right.
Okay, so then the next morning, the dwarven woman directs you to, I'm going to say, Jean. Jean is the local tailor, and he charges 5 gold pieces per person for cold weather gear. And she also charges another 5 silver pieces per day for food if y'all want to take some rations.
Rations would be good.
Maybe not a bad idea, especially if we happen to get stuck somewhere. I say let's go get the foul weather gear, the cold winter gear, and then we could head out.
And rations.
Of course, and rations.
So I will get 10 days worth of rations.
Okay. All right. So then everyone goes over to Jean. You see his little sign that says Towns Tailor, Jean. You see this wood elf. Yeah, he's a wood elf. And yeah, he makes clothes for you. Wow, this has really not a whole lot. Okay, just pause the game. Here's what it says. After talking to the party, there's no one else in the tavern except for the bartender. It is a dwarf woman. She asks if the party wants to eat or drink something and if they will want rooms. Breaks down the cost of everything. If the party wants to immediately go to the forest, you can jump ahead. Or if you decide to sleep in the tavern, there are no problems in the night. In the next morning, you can buy provisions with the bartender, 5 silver pieces per day of food. If you want cold weather gear, you can visit the town's tailor, a male wood elf named Jean, and buy them for 5 gold pieces per person. And then it jumps into the next scene.
Sounds a lot like, a theater play where it's just very functional. It's just like, here's what everything does, and you can just add whatever you want.
Yeah. It really does. Yeah, because, otherwise, I would imagine that this would have a little bit more of a layout of, Jean, what type of stats he would have, and then the bartender. There's no name for the bartender. There's a name for the guy who gives you the quest, and apparently a name for the tailor, but the Goliath doesn't have a name, or the bartender.
Goliath is just like Blue Lotus guy.
Yeah. Yeah, red shirt
you mean,
dude.
You mean Emperor.
Emperor, yeah.
Well, I guess there's something he said. Sometimes it's kind of nice having a lot more things open, so where you can either add it into an existing campaign. He can be someone that you meet again later, or a member of the party, something like that. So it kind of gives you a little bit more kind of finagle with it. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily a named character, but I see what you're saying. Sometimes for some of these one shots, you like a little bit more info. But mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the big thing, and it just might be because we've been spoiled so much with all these adventures that people have given us, but we have experienced adventures where a single page will have a whole encounter on it, or even 2 pages will have a whole encounter on it, and then that's it. And then you can move on to the next encounter. Whereas this is just, it just gives you some information. And I think to Sean's point, it's just like a theatrical scene. And if that's the case, then like if I would buy this, I would feel like it would need a bit more context. Is that right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, just saying, hey, you know, I've laid the structure for this, but it's up to you to flesh it out and make it as like to actually build the world as you would like to see it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's like you wrote it just as a 20-second passage, like a transitional scene. You just see it, we're all in the shop, we're getting our gear, we all exit the shop with basically we walk in normal clothes, we walk out looking like Russian hermits.
Right. Exactly.
Montage.
Yeah. Montage. Yeah.
No, but these are the kind of things I actually do like because, interestingly enough, a lot of the campaigns I've DM'd over the last couple months now were pretty much along those same lines as this, just bare minimum, and I've pretty much just improv all that content. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, pros and cons, I guess it depends on the type of DM you are. I mean, as pretty much everyone has said, you can definitely do the whole thing of improving into it by just giving the basics that are given to you, or, you know, if you aren't great with the improv, then it's definitely going to be a con because you're not comfortable adding in everything. So you almost need like a warning on the package saying, hey, this is what this is.
Right. Yeah. Very cool. I like that. Let's use that segue to move on. Okay. So thank you, Marissa. That was awesome.
No problem.
Okay. Moving on. All right, so there's a road to the north, and that leads straight into the forest. And again, there's no context of what I'm supposed to read or not supposed to read, so I'm just going to give it all out. There are no green in sight, as the few trees that still have some foliage are covered in white snow, as opposed to saying there is no green foliage. Okay, sorry. Even with the snow covering the forest, the party can manage to stay on the road. As there are a small number of animals roaming in the forest, there is no need to roll for a random encounter. Let's see. Let's go with Cluck. Can you make a survival check?
Yes, I can. That would be a natural 20 plus, because I do know how checks work. Hold on. It'll let me scroll down page. That would be 24.
I'm going to say this. If there is a natural 20, we'll just roll with that as like complete and total success. No need to add extra modifiers.
Cool.
Yeah. So I think that's going to be a little bit too for my taste. Okay. Yeah. And again, just based on, you know, my DMing style, I'm like, just trudge along here. You spot sparse footprints as if a group used this road a couple days ago.
Coming towards us or going away?
I don't know. It doesn't say here. It just says as if a group used this road a couple days ago.
All right. So I make sure that party is aware. And I point out the footprints. Can I use them to kind of follow those footprints? Are they clear enough for me to like use them to track from?
Yeah. And again, these footprints are just running north and south.
Okay. I'm going to focus on the ones going in the same direction that we're going, or at least the directions we were given to go to the monastery.
Okay. Alrighty. And yeah, so you continue on the road. Again, no encounters, none at all.
D is randomly climbing trees. Why not? Right. Lots of trees. There's never a tree that's not fun to climb.
Gareth is just kind of periodically doing power poses with his like warlock staff.
All right. Well, you know what? Screw this. I'm bringing in an oldie but goodie.
Oh boy.
Tired of this.
No, you can't bring that in here. Not right now. Oh wait, we're doing fantasy physics.
Yes.
Yes.
Son of a bitch.
No.
Is this your first time? Because it sounds like it's your first time.
All right. So let's see. Let's go with Jakar and Cluck. Both of you roll me perception checks.
That would be 21.
I got an 18.
Okay. With a 21. No, let me start with the 18. With an 18, you hear something that sounds like a low-level howl. Like you're not really sure what that is, but with an 18, you can pretty much tell that would be something par for the course that you would find somewhere out here. And with a 21, Cluck, you're a ranger. You definitely recognize that smell, and it makes you nervous, so nervous that you start to molt a little bit because you know that it's an abominable Yeti headed your way.
So you all of a sudden see Cluck, his feathers kind of all puff up, and he's just all of a sudden looking back and forth. So there's we should go.
Oh.
after a moment, he finally called it a Yeti. It's very scary. Ice Yeti.
Yeti?
Yes, that's what I said.
Oh, cool.
Not cool. Not cool.
And as you say that, from between some of the trees, you see movement, and then out comes this ginormous, huge humanoid monstrosity of, like, just white fur and these fangs. And let's go ahead and roll initiative.
All righty. That's a 10 for Gareth.
That's 19.
Oh, wait, sorry, that's 11, sorry.
Okay. That's a total of 5 for D.
Jakar with a 19.
That would be a 12 for Cluck.
Jay, how is it that you roll high every freaking time, dude?
Okie dokie.
Ah, yes, that's it. All right, so batter up, Jakar. You have the floor.
All right, see this
ginormous Yeti headed your way.
So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to cast Tasha's Hideous Laughter.
All right.
Creature of your choice that you can see within range perceives everything as hilariously funny and falls into fits of laughter if this spell affects it. Becomes incapacitated and unable to stand up for the duration. And need to make a wisdom save, it looks like.
Mm-hmm. And what's my save?
Your save is going to be a 15.
Oh, goodness. And that's, you said it was a wisdom?
Yes.
Got a 16.
Oof. Well, since that's not going to work, I'm going to go ahead and use my bonus action to cast Eldritch Blast on it.
Alrighty.
I tried to be nice.
Tried to be nice, he says.
So, ooh, fun. Does a 19 hit?
A 19 hits.
Okay, so where's that D10? Okay, so that's going to be 11 points.
Damn. Okay. Hey, and what exactly, what element is an Eldritch Blast?
It's force damage.
Force damage, cool. Yeah, you hit it hard.
Fun.
Okay, next up, Cluck, you have the floor.
So, Cluck immediately grabs his longbow and takes a few steps back, giving him a little extra distance, because I don't like being close to things. And I take my first shot at him, and that would be a 22.
22 hits.
Going to be 11 points of damage for the first arrow, and the second shot is going to be 17. Does it hit?
17 does hit.
And that's going to be another 11 points of damage, piercing damage.
Okay. All right. It is not happy at all. And next up is Gareth.
All right. After seeing Jakar's Eldritch Blast, he's just like, oh, I can do that. Hey, Jakar, watch this. He goes to catch Eldritch Blast on it.
All righty. Roll it.
Here we go. Oh, finally. Okay, so that's a dirty 20?
Dirty 20 hits.
Alrighty. So that's going to be 11 points of damage.
Man, what's up with you and 11, guys? Damn. Alrighty. Next up is the Yeti. It is not like getting pelted right here. You know what? I don't want to... should we make it another house rule? I'm tired of everyone saying dirty 20. How about nasty 20?
Okay.
I'm going with dank 20.
Dank 20, better.
Dank 20.
Okay, yeah. No, I like that. Dank 20 is good.
Dank 20, love it. Okay, cool. So then he is going to, let me see, he's going to start charging towards, the last one that hit him was Gareth.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to use Chilling Gauge. The Yeti targets one creature it can see within 30 feet of it. And if you can see the Yeti, you must succeed on a DC 18 Constitution saving throw.
Okay, that sounds hard. So, all right. So I'll just do that saving throw now?
Yeah, Constitution.
Oh, just shy, 17.
Ooh, all right. So you're going to take some... old damage.
A lot of dice.
Definitely sounded like it.
Oh boy. Ouch. So now you're going to get hit with 20 points of cold damage.
Oof.
And you are now paralyzed for 1 minute, unless you're immune to cold damage.
I am not.
He is now.
Well, that wasn't in the crib sheet.
That's all it does on its turn. It closes the distance between y'all and just got Gareth on a chilling gaze. Next up is D.
Okay, so D will do some focus concentration, and you see her helm start to glow as she casts Searing Smite on herself. And then I will ram the Yeti in the side.
Okay, and just for reference, is a satyr considered a small creature or medium?
Medium.
Okay, you're going to ram it in its side?
Yes.
All right, go for it.
All right. Yeah.
It sounds like a 20 to me.
No, that's a nat 1.
Nat 20? I heard a nat 20, guys. Yeah.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, that bad audio. You broke up.
Yeah, that bad audio. Yeah.
I was rolling dice at the same time, and I rolled a nat 1, but that was just a test. So, yeah.
Totally understandable. All right, so nat 20. Okay, so just, again, one point of reference. The Abominable Yeti is a huge creature, and so since D decided to ram it in its side, I'm guessing it's the rib area.
Uh-huh.
All right, roll that damage.
So that is 4 bludgeoning.
Did you say 40?
Well, what rules are we using on crit hits here? Because if it's doubled, then I double the dice or roll twice?
Just add a 0 to your number.
Just add a 0? Okay.
I don't like those odds.
This is fantasy. This is fantasy physics.
Yeah. It checks, yeah. Checks out.
So that would be the damage for the ram, but then Searing Smite also, what it does is when the next time I hit a creature with a melee weapon, which the ram is considered a melee weapon, yay monks, your weapon flares with white hot intensity and the attack deals an extra 1d6 fire damage to the target and causes the target to ignite in flames.
Alrighty.
So rolling again. That's a 3.
Okay, so that's 43 fire damage is what I heard?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he does need to make a con save.
Con save. Ah, rolled off my table. Hold on. There we go. Ooh, that is a very awesome. Whoa, is that for real? And that's a 13.
Aw, meets it, beats it.
Yes. Wow. Okay, so describe the attack from where you're standing, and then because you're aiming for the ribs, you're going to have to jump up vertically to hit it because it's a huge creature. It's not even a large creature. You're a medium, and there's a large, then there's a huge. Describe that action, or like how much damage.
Okay.
Channel your inner goat.
The way of the goat.
Man.
We want to hear every detail. Go for it. You have the floor.
All right. So having seen everybody else go, she's kind of stands, concentrates, and then just starts kind of kicking a hoof, and then just charges as hard as she can and leaps into the air. And as she's doing that, that helm is just glowing bright white, and she just rams her head straight into those ribs and just goes, bah! And then jumps off.
You know what? That is such an awesome description. You cracked 2 ribs on a huge creature.
Oh, yeah.
And immediately, the Abominable Yeti is set on fire. And according to the rules here, and I got to play by the rules, if the Yeti takes fire damage, it has disadvantage on attack rolls and ability checks until the end of its next turn.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, one of the things about a Yeti, and again, this is metagaming, but whatever, is that it does have a fear of fire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like, she's like, yeah, of course. Duh. Very cool. All right, next up is Jakar.
All right, so with that, I am going to cast Dissonant Whispers.
Okay.
Must make a wisdom saving throw.
A wisdom saving throw.
Got to beat a 15 at disadvantage.
At disadvantage. Because of fire.
Because of fire.
All right, that first one was an 8. That next one was an 11. So a 9 and a 12, those fail.
Cool. So now it's going to take 3d6 psychic damage.
Alrighty.
So that's 5 plus 6 plus 4 and my spell attack. So it's going to take 21 points of psychic damage.
God, dog, dude. All right, you know what? Because he's on fire, he's out of his wits. So why don't you roll 3 more of those? Keep it going.
I like this. Oh, God. 1, 2, and 2.
All right.
So it bounces out. So it's add another 11 to that. 32 cool. points of psychic damage. Mm-hmm. But I still have my bonus cantrip, and oh, we'll just hit him with another Eldritch Blast. So does a 14 hit?
It does not hit.
All right.
This thing is ablaze, and you know what? It's just the intensity from the impact from Dee's rib-cracking headbutt, fire headbutt that she did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that sudden blast of heat, and that's what made you miss.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That sounds... plus I just gave it a migraine from hell. Yeah. So it's just doubled over.
Math checks out. Okay, so next up is Cluck.
So I'm gonna get a little bit closer, and I'm going to my first attack. It's gonna be a 19.
That hits
for 8 points of piercing damage from the arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second attack, instead of shooting him, I'm gonna take my wings, and because I move closer now, I'm gonna kind of fan the flames that are on this Yeti with my wings. Mm-hmm. And hoping to kind of get it to kick up even more, and hopefully get it to continue to ignite, or make it even more painful, or do more damage to it with the flames.
Alrighty.
And that would be a 19.
19 to hit?
Yep.
That hits.
So I'm not sure what you want me to roll for the fire damage, but...
Let's go with 2d6.
Okay, hold on. That would be another 10 points.
This guy is looking rough. Like, he was thinking it's going to be a quick snack, and then y'all gave him a check of reality here. And so next up is Gareth Amistad.
Okay. After taking that chilling gauge hit, so I need to roll wisdom, was it?
Constitution.
Constitution, okay.
Sorry. DC 18.
DC 18, great. All right, let's do it. Well, that's not happening.
What'd you get?
That's a 9.
19?
Yeah, it was 19.
You're cutting out, man. Australia's losing its signal.
Yeah, sorry.
Typical.
That's a government NBN.
All right, 19. Did y'all hear 19?
Yep, that's what I heard.
I heard it.
Yep.
Right. Well, and you magically are no longer paralyzed.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so he's just kind of locked out of his paralysis and just back up on his feet, and doesn't hesitate, just kind of starts running wildly at the Yeti and is going to use Vampiric Touch on it. To see if we can get some of his hit points back. And here we go. Yep. Oh, natural 20. Okay, here we go. That's a 13.
That's a 13. Wow. Okay.
So Garrett just runs straight up to him and basically kind of does what that sort of cult leader thing from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. You know, trying
to rip that heart out. Kalima!
Shakti Day!
In this case, he's just running straight up to the Yeti and just kind of like pouncing onto its chest and like plunging his fingers into its solar plexus and just kind of saying, I want that back!
And then he go, all right. And so, again, you're leaping up as well as you're doing this because, you're attacking a huge creature, not a large creature, and you're a medium creature.
Just embracing that half-orc side and just...
All right. And so the Yeti is rightfully scared out of its wits, and it takes a real deep breath and exhales. Let me see, I'm rolling at a disadvantage. Okay, it exhales this 30-foot cone of frigid air.
Oh.
Mind you, it's air, not a refrigerator.
Frigid air, but it's going right into my face.
Yeah, it's going right into your face, as well as Cluck and Jakar. So all three of you need to make constitution saving throws.
Okay.
Cluck's good.
What'd you get?
I got a 19.
What a coincidence, so did I.
Well, Gareth's got a face full of cold air. I rolled an 8.
You rolled a what?
An 8.
18?
That's what I heard, 18.
Damn, that audio.
It's basically just kind of like Gareth's gotten like a hairdryer blown in his face. And he's got like black and blonde streaks of hair. So it's just, it looks like a Maybelline commercial gone wild.
Or it looks like, what's her name?
Beyonce.
Thank you. Yeah, the Beyonce. Y'all ever seen that meme of her?
Oh, yes.
That's what I'm imagining right now, dude. Yeah, it's this bad picture of Beyonce where she's in the middle of a concert and the wind is blowing up, and so she has like this face on her, like she just got hit with like this.
Oh yeah, yes, I've seen that. It's just pure disgust.
Yeah. and her lawyers have been trying to get it off the internet for years.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what we're seeing right now with Gareth right now, that same Beyonce face. All right, so here we go. It's gonna, whoa, I need a calculator for this. Hold on. That's gonna be, those are high deadly numbers here.
So it sounds like they best.
Oh, hold on. I wish it was that easy. Okay, that's gonna be 34 points of cold damage on a failed save or half as much on a successful one. So that's gonna be 17 points of cold damage to the three of you.
Just got that stuff back. Yeah.
It is out of breath, and that is the end of its turn. Next up is D.
And I'm assuming that the save that you did in which he saved from the spell meant that the spell ended, but he's still on fire?
Correct.
Alrighty. Well then, I am just going to... Yeah, I'm just going to start popping him. Well, posh, well, posh with fist. So, rolling to hit. That is a 15.
Wow, meets it, beats it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, and that is 5 bludgeoning, and I will follow that up with a flurry of blows.
Alrighty.
So that is a 7 and a natural 18, so yeah.
So 7 and 18?
Yeah, with the flurry of blows is 2 unarmed strikes, so 1 was a 7, so it would miss, and then the second was a natural 18, so that would be a 24.
Okay. Oh, I got it. I thought you were rolling the damage. I'm like, wow, okay, 7 points of damage. That's pretty good.
No. That's just a hit.
Okay.
All right, so one of those hit. That's a 5.
Solid 5.
Plus 3, so 8 total.
Alrighty, this guy is bleeding profusely. Its ribs are starting to swell up from where you pelted it before, and now you're just pummeling him, and it's just like an insult.
And I will disengage and back up as of my drunken swagger.
Nice. Okay, next up is Jakar.
Alright, so I've had enough of this. I'm going to cast Shatter.
Okay, go for it.
You have to make a constitution saving throw.
Okay. Con. That's a 16.
Son of a bitch.
Plus 6. So, yeah, 22.
I figured as much. Damn.
Yep.
Very well. So I'm just going to go ahead and finish my turn using a cunning action, and I'm going to use it to hide.
Okay. Question.
Yes.
Do you have the capability to do sneak attack?
I do.
Okay. With the Eldritch Blast, that's considered a ranged attack. Then you could have added sneak attack to that.
That's true.
If it was if he had advantage or if it was a surprise.
That's with the assassination, and that comes with level 3 rogue. I'm still only rogue level 2.
Well, plus, one of y'all had to be next to the Yeti as well.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think...
If you have an ally within melee range, then yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It also counts.
That would be Gareth and D, so I would call that double advantage, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Basically.
So instead of disengaging, would you like to do an Eldritch Blast with some extra damage?
Okay, yeah, let's do it.
If not, that's okay too. I mean, we can continue.
I'm fine with that.
All right, cool. Just throwing it out there. If you don't like it, send it right back.
Okay. So I got a... Is it 21 hit?
Just barely.
Just barely.
Merely a flesh wound.
All right. And so the sneak attack is only an extra 1d6. Yeah. So we're going to take that, and we're going to take this. Daddy likes. So that's going to be another 20 points of force damage.
Okay. How do you want to do it?
What, kill him off?
Yeah.
So here's how it happens. I'm looking at the charred hairs on this Yeti, the bleeding wounds, the cracked ribs, the fact that there's blood coming out of his ears from all of my mental traumas that I've been dealing with him. He's got a couple of arrows in him, and I approve of this, and I'm smiling. And so I step out of the shadows in this Arctic flurry, and with my enhanced Eldritch Blast, I punch a hole in his chest, and his heart goes flying probably about 20, maybe 30 feet up into the air and gets impaled by a tree branch.
And so it happens, just the way you described it.
Gareth witnesses this and then turns to Jakar like, "That is so awesome! You have to teach me that!"
Cluck is just admiring the fact that as he's plucking his arrows out of the Yeti, recovering them, that the wet Yeti was actually able to be set on fire. Kind of a unique point.
Well, this is Paul's campaign, not mine.
Yeah. This is true.
Yeah, Paul's physics are different from Jacob's physics.
Yes, I guess this is probably true.
Probably. I mean, I can put it back in and y'all can still battle.
No, no, work. No. Just letting them know that, you know, that moist things can actually still catch on fire.
Yes. Okay, so it's starting to get dark now. And let's see, Cluck and Jakar. I need a survival check.
That would be a 19.
I only got a 14.
Okay, so with a 19, Cluck, you find a cave nearby. And Jakar, with a 14, you know how to carve up a Yeti for extra rations.
Nice, I do that.
So what do y'all want to do?
Cluck will, once we get everyone to the cave and everything, I start a fire. And you see, I pull out one of my rations, which is a ear of corn. And I'm just kind of plucking at it. Just enjoying my ear of corn.
Alrighty, Gareth.
Gareth is gonna just sit by the fire and start cooking some rations.
Alrighty, and Dee.
Dee is going to pull out her pan flute and start playing with the echoes in the cave with the pan flute.
Yeah, and of course it's a pan flute. That's yeah.
All right, let me hear that audio.
No.
Just imagining Anchorman when Ron's like, oh, I'm totally unprepared, and he pulls the pan flute out of his flute.
Yeah, right.
So Cluck is also going to cast a cordon of arrows around us. I'm going to take several bolts and place them around us, and so it kind of acts as a extra safety watch for us.
Okay, so you do that, and the whole night, nothing happens. Because once again, in this adventure, there's nothing happening.
Okay.
The only thing it says here, and I'm just going to give this to y'all because y'all did really well against the random encounter. During the night, if there is any awake player, he or she can hear some strange noises as if some heavy bag was being dragged across the forest. Does anybody want to attempt to follow the sound?
Gareth will.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
I'll give it a shot.
Okay. Apparently, according to this, you walk in circles for a while and end up back in the camp. And that's all that happens.
Okay.
Very well. I just report back to everybody what we found. That was it.
Okay. So then the next morning, you spot some footprints close to the camp as if some creature wandered around during the night. Let's see. Let's go with Dee and Gareth. Both of you roll perception checks.
Right, that's not garbage. That's a 17 for Gareth.
That's a 9 for Dee.
Okay. So, Gareth, you find a rune carved in a tree, and roll a religion check.
Right. Oh, natural 20.
Oh, beautiful. Wow. Okay, so then that reveals, out of all the things that you studied or didn't study, you remember this one because it looked really cool, and you wanted to use it for maybe like a band emblem at some point, a heavy metal band. And it's the rune of Ior, an ancient symbol used by demonic cults to summon demons.
Oh, well, that's... Oh, no.
End scene. Alrighty, so then we fast forward to the monastery. As you approach, you can see the monastery is completely abandoned. Made of stone, the exterior walls appears to be slightly burned, as if somebody tried to burn it, but without success. Out in front of this monastery, you see a garden, and you see the actual monastery, and that's all you see. What do y'all want to do?
Buck would like to look around for footprints to see if there was anyone who passed by recently, or if I could see if there was a group of four.
Okay, roll that perception check.
That would be a 22.
Oh yeah, you totally found bipedal tracks that passed in the garden recently.
Does it look like they went inside the monastery, like inside the buildings at all, or do they just kind of circle around the garden?
According to these notes, yeah, the perception check shows that some bipedal creature passed in the garden recently. But I'm going to say, yes, they lead into the monastery. Yeah, literally, dude, that doesn't give you anything else beyond that.
Okay, so if we found these tracks, they seem to have circled around the garden recently, but it also looks like they went to the building right over there.
Everyone looks at the monastery, and you see the door is opened.
Well, I guess I'm going first. Just starts running up to the door.
All right, so then Gareth rolls in, like straight up Strider style, and pushes both doors wide open as he's walking through.
Hmm.
There's no light source in the hall. Just like the exterior walls, it appears that somebody tried to burn the hall a long time ago with no success. And everyone sees large webs, web spiders in the left wall. I think they meant to say spider webs. Yeah, I'll say that. Yeah, everyone sees these large spider webs in the left wall.
How large?
It just says large. You know what? D, roll a perception check.
Right, 13.
With a 13? I mean, large as in, like, you know, a bunch of spiders might have put something together like this.
But not, like, huge spiders.
With a 13, not huge spiders, no.
Let's not give him any other random encounter ideas, please.
Yeah. Alrighty, and let's see, Jakar, yes. Another perception check, please.
Yep. This is 12.
Okay, so with the 12, you notice that there's a one of those spiral stairs over to the right, and in front of you, a double door. You know, with that roll, you can tell that it's locked.
Okay, so there's a locked door over there. But there's a staircase up there.
I'm sorry, a staircase that goes down.
It goes down.
Yeah.
Well, do we use more fire? As like Gareth is gesturing to like evidence of previous fires.
Well, the fire obviously didn't take care of the spiders.
Well, you know, if at first you don't succeed. In this case, probably more like, if at first you don't succeed, you got eaten by spiders. So, who wants to go downstairs?
Well, let me ask this. Does anybody have dark vision?
I do.
Yes, Gareth does as well.
Okay.
I need to double check that. I think so.
I'll just say yes, we all have dark vision.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I agree to that too. All right, so then in that case, everyone sees clear as day two giant spiders in the upper left corner of this main hall area, and they're just kind of observing at this point.
So Cluck casts speak with animals.
Mm-hmm.
To see, have you seen another party of four that came through here about almost 2 weeks ago now?
No, they don't necessarily answer you, but you can see what they saw. Okay. And so, yeah, you see an elderly humanoid dragging another humanoid down the stairs.
Do I recognize this elderly humanoid?
You do not. At least I don't think so, because you'd probably have to roll for it. But you do recognize the armor. It matches the armor that you saw the Goliath had on.
Okay. So I relay that information to my fellow party members. I look to the two large spiders, and I tell them, we mean you no harm, and we're just trying to find these other people, and we'll leave you some other rations to help keep food in your bellies, if you're willing to not fight us for anything or block our path.
Okay. When you say that, you see something else. You see them observing those locked doors in front of you, and you also see a hand go out to reach it, and then you see them immediately strike at whatever was reaching for those doors.
Ah. So the elderly man was dragging the other humanoid in the armor
down the stairs. Yes.
Okay.
And then you also noticed it was a different humanoid that was reaching for those double doors, and you see the spiders immediately, like, striking at them, like, through their own eyes. It's like you're attacking the person, whoever was reaching for the door. Totally different person.
Okay, so I would say let's stay away from these doors right now, because these two fied creatures are protecting it. They don't seem to mind if we go around the rest of the monastery. Just don't touch those doors.
Sounds good.
So, okay, well, so it's down to the creepy staircase then?
I would say yes. That's a good place to start, down the stairs.
Okay, well,
capital idea.
In that case, Gareth just initiates mage armor on himself.
Cluck takes one of the rations that Jakar had given him from the Yeti, and I... Mm-hmm. Actually, I take two and I kind of chuck it in front of the spiders so it's well away from me, but closer to them, into their web, so they can deal with it another time. I say thank you very much. You both have been very kind. And I back away slowly and then start to head down the stairs.
Alrighty. Is anyone else going with them?
Before I go down the stairs, I'm going to put on my cloak of displacement.
Okay.
Yep. So, Gareth's obviously following along down the steps as well, but after his mage armor has taken form over his clothes, and having, like, cracked his voice before, he just kind of, I'm coming!
All right. Andy, what are you doing?
Heading down the stairs. Find out where the party is. But I did want to make one note. With my helm, I can actually sense the location of celestials and fiends within 30 feet of me, just in case that comes into play.
Within 30 feet of you?
Yep.
Okay.
Aren't you nice?
It's a very fun helm.
It's a demon detector.
Yeah. And, like, unlike, like, with the presence of good and evil spell, I can actually tell like the actual location, provided they are not fully hidden, like under full cover.
Okay, cool.
So, just with the whole demon summoning rune. Thought it might come into play. Wanted to let you know.
Very cool. Very cool. Thank you. Okay, and so everyone heads down the stairs after the A-team montage. Everyone's getting ready and geared up for war. Or no, is it Commando where he's got all the gear?
Oh, yeah, that was Commando.
That's it.
That's Commando. Let's go with Commando. We did A-team. F-team. Anyway, so you're going down the stairs. Yeah, the stairs leads to a basement. There's no signal of these stairs being used in a long time. All right, so you're in this long hall, and then further on down, you see that it immediately turns to the left. Down this first long hall, you see it filled with boxes and barrels.
Gareth is just going to roll perception immediately.
Okay, roll it.
That's a 13.
With a 13, you can tell these are barrels that have provisions in them. But more importantly, you can smell the provisions and how rotted away they all are.
Oh. And like Gareth pinches his nose. Oh my God, you guys, you don't want to go down here. It's so bad.
Are there any other doors down this hallway?
From what you can tell, no. You just see that at the end of the hall, it turns left, like a sharp 90-degree turn to the left.
So it looks like there's possibly another path at the far end. I think we need to check it.
I'll look ahead, and I'm going to stealthily hug the wall and make my way over to the turn and see if I can peek and see anything.
Okay, roll that stealth check.
Will do. That's a 27.
Whoa!
With a 27, you're a warlock, and you know of so many different fiends and, you know, ways of selling your soul for greater power. And you know of this one in particular. You wouldn't necessarily say it's a fiend, but more of a hero, legendary hero named Shocklin. And you blend into the shadows and you just hug the wall, and nobody, you're moving and no one can hear you. Not even your own party members can hear you hugging that wall. You glance over the edge of the wall down the hallway, and you see a 50-foot long corridor. And at the very end, you can see a double metallic door. And that is all you can see.
Using my warlock features, I am going to relay this information to my party telepathically.
Okay, and so the rest of the party hears what you had to say. You see a 50-foot long corridor and a set of double metallic doors at the very end. What does everybody want to do?
Pretty sure D would squeak in fear when someone starts talking in her head.
Gareth is just going to do the same thing he did when he saw the open doors of the monastery, and he's just going to run headlong at the two metallic doors.
Alrighty. Let's see. Gareth, what's your passive perception?
It's not great. it's 11.
Okay. So you head right over, and you can tell that the door is locked. But more importantly, you do recognize those same runes as before, the rune of Ior, that the doorknobs are shaped just like that rune.
Okay, so demon cults sign, the rune is, it's of a demon cult, and I guess it's a big door is probably not going to be a good thing behind the door. Just yelling at the rest of the party down the hallway.
Well, if it's not good, maybe you shouldn't be yelling.
What?
Oh, bother.
Shoot, how'd I do this? Actually, no, hold on. Okay, with that, what do y'all want to do next?
Okay. So I guess I'll probably do an arcana check on the rune just to see if I can derive more information, I guess.
All right, roll it.
Yep. Oh, that's a dank 20.
Dank 20, nice.
Dank 20.
Okay, so I do have a discrepancy here. An arcana check detects a trace of illusory magic on the door.
Right.
So the thing is that an arcana check is more of an intelligence, not necessarily a spell check. Right. And so I'll play along with this. This is, you ever heard like nails on a chalkboard? This is what this feels like as I'm reading all this stuff here. Yeah. Anyway, with the arcana check, you detect the trace of illusionary magic on the door. So you can tell that the door is actually not locked after all. It's just an illusion that it's locked.
Oh, and just turning back down to shout down the hallway, oh, it's okay, it's not locked.
And on that note, the doors fly open, and can you do a dexterity save throw?
Yep. All right, what does a 12 get me?
A 12. gets you flung back 10 feet.
Okay, that's better than I was expecting.
And just for S's and G's, 1 point of bludgeoning damage as you fall backwards and you're knocked prone.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Oh, yeah. Gareth, you see an elderly man, and you see he looks just almost like a monastery monk, but he has like these hollow white eyes, and from his mouth you see a finger dangling as he slurps it up, and his hands are human, but they have like these sharp pointy ends at their fingertips, and he starts slowly making his way to you, and you just hear him flash.
Okay, Gareth is like, as the creepy old monk is like moving towards him, he's just kind of stepping backwards, and he's like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm good, I already ate. Do you live here?
And, okay, let's roll for combat.
All right.
Actually, you know what, let's just keep the same roll as before.
Okay.
Yeah, that'll just be easier. So you had an 11 last time?
Yeah.
Okay. And you know what, I want to do the same thing with this guy here. All right, so first up is going to be Jakar.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, I am still in sneak.
Yeah, but you're not peeking around the corner.
So I am going to stealthily move just around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And I am going to, actually, you know what? I'm going to do, I'm going to need DM's approval for this one.
All right.
So combining a cantrip with a stealth attack, like magically charging the arrow.
Yeah, the cantrip would be your bonus action, and then the stealth attack with the arrow would be your action.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, I'm going to do that.
Alrighty.
So, see, how far away is, how much distance is there between the cannibal and the pseudo-warlock?
Hey, says the multi-classer.
Yeah. we'll say 10 feet.
10 feet?
Yeah.
Perfect. So I'm going to charge my arrow using my packed weapon of a longbow.
All right, go for it. I got you.
Oh, yeah. Packed weapon, longbow. I'm going to charge my arrow with the poison spray cantrip.
Yeah, go for it.
And I'm going to fire.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Please tell me if 14 hits.
Misses.
No! Ah, that would have been so cool.
Would have been. Yeah, totally.
Damn.
Seems the turntables have turned.
Yes. The turns have tabled.
Yeah. All right. Next up is going to be Cluck.
So I'm going to cast Hail of Thords. So I'm going to move up so I'm next to Jakar. So I could still see this thing. Mm-hmm. And as my bonus action, I'm going to cast Hail of Thords at second level.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to strike out. So that's going to be a 24 and then a 18 for the second shot.
All right, both hit.
Okay. And let's see here. It's going to be 6 plus 8. So it's going to be 12 points of piercing damage plus an additional 16. And
so what's the total?
36 plus 12, 48 points of piercing damage.
You're and kidding me, dude.
He does have a constitution, dexterity saving throw.
God. Oh, man. Okay, and sorry, you said it was 36 total?
Well, 12 for sure, and then he's got a dex saving throw.
That's a 10.
That's a fail.
Okay.
So yes, 48 points of piercing damage total.
Wow. Okay. All right.
See, I could do magic on my arrows too, but I hit something.
All right. As soon as that happens, this creature is now bloodied, and you see its muscle fibers just pulsate, and it explodes. Not necessarily like blow up, but you see like all of its muscles just pulsate, and it's just like this guy just had a shot of steroids or something. His body, like all the muscles, just grew like 4 extra inches. And so before it was kind of a weak creature, and now it's gotten way stronger. And next up is going to be Gareth.
Okay. Gareth is a little nervous, but he holds for... Actually, not holds. What he does instead is like,
oh, okay, that's gross. How about please don't eat me, and maybe this will affect your appetite. And then he casts poison spray.
Alrighty. Do I have to do a save throw? Or?
Yes, you do. Yeah, so it's a constitution.
Okay. That is a constitution 22.
Well, touche, sir.
And it just smiles in anticipation as it starts getting hungrier.
Okay, I'm just going to keep moving back towards the rest of the party.
All right, so mind you, this hallway is 50 feet and you're at about 40 feet.
Yep.
Okay. And then so with that, it just, again, slowly starts creeping ever so slowly towards Gareth. And, okay. He's at this point, he's just toying with you. And he's going to claw at you. And that's going to be a 12 to hit.
Oh, that does not hit.
Okay, so this thing just slashes out at you, and you're a bit freaked out enough to where you just scooch back just out of the way, like, whoa!
Well, that was close. Please get away from me.
And it now attacks with a bite. And that's going to be a 13.
That meets it.
Oh, okay, so that's going to be 2d8. That's going to be 12 points of piercing damage.
Just gliding right through that mage armor, huh?
Okay, and then make a constitution saving throw, DC 15.
Okay, here we go. That's a nine.
What was that? A 19?
Yeah, it was 19. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Australian internet. You know how it is.
Yeah. All right, that saves. All right. So you missed the extra 3d6 necrotic damage.
Oof. Okay. That's preferable.
Alrighty, and so now he has you like near his clutches. Next up is going to be D.
Alrighty. So how far away am I from him?
We'll say you're 30 feet away.
Is my helmet telling me if he's a fiend?
Oh, yeah.
Just a creepy old man. Oh,
no, this is totally a fiend. With that helmet, you know exactly what's going on. This is a Wendigo, and it possessed the humanoid here.
Okay. Well, you're creepy, dude, and I'm going to squeeze my eyes shut and use my helm to cast Guiding Bolt.
Alrighty.
Yeah, so let me go. That was a nat 20. Legit?
Because of course.
Remember, just add a zero to whatever number you roll.
Okay. 4d6. Okay. 1 second. I need, just because I want to roll this all at once, I actually need to pull out a couple more dice.
Okay.
3. Okay, so that 4, 4, 4, 5. So, well, 17.
I heard 4,445.
I mean, if we're just adding a zero, that would be 170. So,
I mean, just either 170 or 4,445. I mean, this is a Wendigo. I mean, that's your call, yeah. Boss.
The pronunciation of Wendigo.
Wendigo. Yeah, you only find them in D&D and Australia, apparently.
Yeah.
Okay, D, with that helmet, it's like your spider senses are going off. So something about Wendigos, it's a demon trapped in the abyss. It feasts on humanoid meat. Whenever a humanoid commits cannibalism, the Wendigo is able to escape the abyss and possess the cannibal's body. So with that 4,450 points of damage, how do you want to do this?
Just once again, she just kind of looks at me like, you're creepy. And the helm just like fires out this shot of radiant light that just consumes him. And she's like, please don't be any more of those guys.
Now, under normal circumstances, I would say give me more description because Jake is here. But no, that was perfect. That was awesome. As soon as you do, the Wendigo explodes and just bits of human flesh are flung in every direction. Yeah, you just annihilated this fiend. The fiend evaporates and you're the only one that can see this. Well, no, actually you have two warlocks with you. The three of you see this portal open up beneath it and it immediately gets sucked into the portal and then within a flash, it's gone.
Ooh.
And congratulations, you just defeated the Wendigo horror.
Woo! Good job, Marissa.
Yay.
At that, there was much rejoicing.
Okay, so everybody returns back to Relicta, and you report back to Frigus, and you see him waiting for you at the Cold Deer. He thanks you and says he feels terrible for the Blue Lotus group. Anybody want to roll an insight check?
Yeah, I'll take care of that. That would be an 18.
With an 18, you smell the BS a mile away. He's not that sorry at all. He does pay everybody, wishes you good luck, and he now has to return to his family and report the news. As he starts to go to his room, he turns back to all of you and asks if y'all can be his guards on the road, offering another 40 gold pieces to each of you for this quest.
It's fair. I'll let everyone else decide.
Yeah, I'm not wild about the cold, so sure.
And that's where the story ends. Yeah, literally, that's where it ends.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thanks for playing. Big, nice, big, bold letters here. Well, all right, guys. Time to call it a night.
Yeah.
Time to head to bed.
Oh, yeah.
Good night, everybody.
Night, guys.
Hey, guys.
All right. Y'all have a good one.
All right. Until next time.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. That was enjoyable.
It was.
It definitely requires the cool thing is that it does give the DM a lot of play everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It means that, you know, the DM has a lot more work creative side than most adventures.
That is very true. Very true. And yeah, I mean, I pretty much did my own little 2 cents of this whole adventure. But yeah, no, it has a lot of potential. And there is room for growth for a first try. I don't know if this is a first try or not, but for a first try DM, yeah, this would be excellent as far as going that extra mile for doing prep work. I mean, because honestly, I think we would have been done possibly 30-45 minutes ago had I not thrown a Yeti at y'all.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, like the big fight would have been the actual Wendigo and not the Yeti.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say I can imagine a lot of fun being had with that, especially kind of setting a group of adventurers would and having fun with just having Wendigo stalking party.
Yeah See, and that's what I thought it was gonna be. So when I read it, I'm like, oh, that sounds interesting. And then all of a sudden I finished reading it within the span of it, and I'm going, yeah, like, that's what I'm saying, there was so much potential. Maybe add some more glyphs out there or clues or something, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It may even be worth revisiting later on down the line, just, you know, just go back to it and flesh it out.
Oh yeah, for sure. Now, maybe perhaps the big battle was supposed to be the two giant spiders, because you're supposed to explore that other room, and in that other room it's supposed to, I guess, have more clues on the actual monk that was there that you see at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think the clues were right, but the way it was laid out, the clue should have been on the way to the monastery, not just in the monastery guarded behind two giant spiders. But either way, though, it was definitely a lot of fun. There is a lot of open air to be had to explore the space a lot more. Overall, yeah, I thought it was pretty good. What are y'all thoughts?
I mean, I had a lot of fun. I would probably not recommend it for a new DM, because there's a lot of things that could trip you up if you've got players that are really creative, like using speak with animals to get around the spiders. Then that does take out like that big fight, just like what we did.
Yeah.
So if there's not something there for a new DM to kind of be like, oh, well, that was like the big thing. Now what do we do? More experienced DMs can obviously play off that a little bit easier. But no, I mean, and like you did a great job with it and throwing in some random stuff. But once again, a new DM probably isn't going to be able just to fly off the wing like that. I still had fun with it. I definitely think that lots of room for improvement. But still, I mean, just for like your basic idea to kind of give you a foothold and boost a little bit of your planning, then definitely go for it.
Very cool. I think on that note, we'll just go ahead and call it a night then. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. And yeah, got to definitely have you back soon.
Well, hey, I had a blast.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Awesome.
No, thanks for having me.
Well, all right, guys. Time to call it a night.
All right.
Y'all have a good one.
Hey, guys.
All right. Until next time.